analyst told me that I was right out of my head, the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than alive. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not. No.
It's drama to time. Kicking back and enjoy. Let's have some fun with your favorite boy. It's Kent. How are you doing out there, everyone? Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Tromedy Podcast. It's Kenneth Allen bringing it to you. This is the second part of a two-part episode with Joelle Miletus, psychologist for military and paramilitary personnel all across the Bay Area. And she comes to you tonight, today, this evening, this afternoon, the morning, whatever time you happen to be listening. And she's bringing the healing to you. The first part, if you missed it, is up on the website, also on Stitcher and on iTunes. Please go use it, love it, tell a friend about it. We're having so much fun at Unitet Studios doing this that it's got to get out to the masses. And thank you for listening. We've had such a good time talking to you on the old Twitter, on the RSS feed, on the what do you call those things? The bloopies? No, what do you the blogs? Thank you for the blogging. Yeah, I love doing that. I'm new to it, but I love it. I love it. It's the most fun. It's really such a strange world for me that I'm dipping my toe into. And I want to express my thanks to you for being so positive. So far, no trolls. So far, nobody giving us any crap. So that's nice. I think it's bringing it's the healing portion of this is reaching you. And you're getting excited about it. And I think especially from Joelle's last part of the interview, it was so much fun. We love doing it, and I've gotten nothing but really good positive response from it. So again, if you haven't heard it, go listen to it. The second half of it today is regarding relationships. How do you handle somebody who is a firefighter or a paramedic or a nurse or doctor or in the military who has to deal with this regular stress and brings it home inevitably or has to deploy for months? How do you handle that? And how do you, as a caregiver, handle being a father, being a normal guy at home after all of the things that you've seen on the job? That's a difficult question. I'm not qualified to answer it, but you know who is? Joelle Miletus. Bam! Psychologist to the stars. I'm going to go ahead and pass this baton over to Joelle, where we pick up right about the time we start talking about relationships. Everybody, tune in. Enjoy. I was nuts. No more ifs or ands or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas. But I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be. Now I heard little children were supposed to sleep tight. Couples relationships too as well. When you're talking with your spouse or significant other, fighting with them, are there healthy fights?
Of course. I don't think, first of all, I don't think there's a perfect person, a perfect marriage, a perfect anything. It's, you know, I like the saying, perfectly imperfect. So I strive for that, being perfectly imperfect. It just lowers the bar. It makes it easier. Right. But, you know, yeah, is there healthy fighting? Absolutely. And I think that a passionate relationship has an element of fighting. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any passion, right?
Right.
And having said that, intimacy is not just sex. I mean, there's physical intimacy, emotional intimacy, intellectual intimacy, and all of those three things need to be functioning at some point, you know, if not all together, in combination thereof, to have a healthy relationship, right?
Right.
So it's learning how to fight fair, you know. A lot of it is, it's not skills that we're taught. You know, we watch our parents, so we take whatever cues that we have from relationships, we take from our parents, whether our parents were divorced when we were 2, 5, 10, or whether they're still married today, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm laughing. My parents have been married almost 48 years. It'll be 48 years next month. And they fight. Like, I mean, they just constantly bicker. And it's hysterical. And my father tells her to F off, and she tells him to F off. And I sit there and I laugh. And I go, don't look at me. I'm off the clock. And there are times when I leave. I'm like, I'm done. Bye-bye. Go to therapy. I don't want to talk to you. Right? So, you know, right? I think that it's fair fighting, right? It's being able to understand, and, you know, I am a feminist. I believe that, you know, women have, you know, an equal right, equal pay, as long as they have the merit. I don't think it's important to dumb down the criteria for anybody. If you have a certain criteria, you know, set the criteria. People that can meet it deserve the job. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I wholeheartedly believe in all areas that men and women are very different. The way that we speak, the way that we think, the way that we communicate, how we communicate with each other. And it's a skill set. And for whatever reason, we don't learn this skill set until we've had failed relationships.
Right.
Or we're failing in a relationship. And then all of a sudden it's like, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Mm-hmm. But my mother always did, or my father, right?
Because
that's who we're looking to,
yes.
You know, or we're looking at their failed relationships. So, you know, it's things, understanding the way men think and the way that they speak and the logic and the problem solving and understanding, you know, the way women communicate and the way women think and that circular talking that we do. That drives our, you know, significant others bananas, because we go around and around and around and around. And so a lot of what I do sometimes is just psychoeducation. It's just explaining, okay, look, men want A plus B equals C. They've resolved the problem. It's off the table. Don't talk about it. Don't think about it. Don't care, because the problem is resolved. We are done with this now, right? Makes perfect sense. And that's fine if she agrees with you. But if she doesn't agree with you, she's going to talk about it 850 million times in a circle, around and around and around and around and around and around and around. Not because we like to hear ourselves talk, but that's the way we work out our problems. So our problems, we women are, in essence, talking creatures. And so we want to talk about it. We want to talk about it. And so a lot of it is learning how to understand what you need or what you want from the person you're in a relationship with. You know, okay, look, Ken, I just need you to listen. I had a really horrible day at work. You know, I just need to bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know what your job is.
Right.
So you're good.
Sounding board.
I sit back. I know my job, right? As opposed to me coming home, God damn it. Mm-hmm. And you're going, whoa, why are you yelling at me? I'm not yelling at you. Yes, you're right. And you've got that whole dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it's skill set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does it save marriages? Yeah. Why don't we learn it? I don't know. And do we get it right? No. Remember, we're not perfect.
No.
So a lot of the times, not only am I working with education, but I'm also trying to set couples up for a little bit of failure, too, saying, not only are you not going to get this right off the bat, but you're going to resort back to bad behavior. And it's always going to be this, you know, hill and valley and this ebb and flow. You know, you get to a certain plateau and your skills don't work anymore, and then you need to learn new skills.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's fair fighting, right? Not, you know, trying to get away from the name calling.
Okay.
And it's semantics. And that's the thing that is absolutely asinine to me as being a very logical person. And yes, I like to talk, but I'm very linear and analytical.
Okay.
Semantics is asinine. I'll give you a perfect example.
Okay, good.
Most men, right, especially when they're in the middle of doing something or watching a game or whatever it is, right, usually watching a game. Hey, can you do the dishes? Yeah, I can do them. I'm capable, but I'm not doing them now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You are questioning my ability as a man on whether or not I am capable of doing... Yes, I am capable of doing the dishes. You're bothering me during the game. Leave me alone. Don't want to do them now. As opposed to someone, you know, your wife, your significant other saying, you know, hey, you know, when you have a chance, would you please do the dishes? Yeah, okay, no problem. I can do them.
Right.
Can and would are huge, right? And when you have a little bit of resentment or you have a long-term relationship where you've been with somebody for a long time... You know, you already know how to push each other's buttons. So, you know, Me coming home and expecting the kitchen to be clean when I come home at work at 9 o'clock at night and it's not done, you know, why can't you do the dishes? Because I didn't feel like it.
Right.
As this, you know, instead of, well, you know, it's really hard for me after working, you know, 14 hours, right, fighting fires. I come home and the chaos of a messy kitchen is really too much for me to handle at the end of the day. It would be helpful if we could figure out a system. Okay, now I'm not offended.
Right.
It's not a personality attack.
Yeah. It's hard to do that.
It's very hard.
Especially
and it's trite.
When you're... Yes, it is. It is trite.
And it's
it takes away the vehemence that you're feeling in the moment.
Right.
You come home and you are stressed out.
Pissed off. The dishes are done.
And now this is one more thing.
Right.
So it's hard to walk in and say, a couple things.
Yeah.
Let's take a break.
Let's have a little family sit down.
Walked in, noticed the dishes. Not the cleanest, I would like. Not your fault. Nobody's naming, blaming. In an ideal world.
What I would like is...
Yeah, I would appreciate, you know... That's not going to happen because they're now setting you off. They're the catalyst to whatever's been going on in your mind. And now... I'm responsible. We guys do this. You can't just put this on... I mean, women, you know, can do this to guys, but I do it all the time. You come home and you go, now this?
Right.
You know, I mean, and... It knows no sex.
That's true. And I, you know, It's just that's the cannon wood is the one, you know.
Cannon wood, okay.
And women, you know, so you want to talk, right? What sets women off? Okay. So, how's your day?
It's good.
Great.
Yeah.
How's your day? Oh, God, it was hell and my boss, you know, and I'm sick and tired of always, you're already rolling your eyes, you sighed, okay.
Don't smell any dinner cooking.
You're going, God, what the... When's that game start? When?
Yeah.
Okay, so you are totally checked out, and there's no eye contact, right? So you want to know why they get pissed off? Because you're not looking at them. Now, I'm not saying this.
Okay.
Right?
Let me sit back in my seat then.
You know,
okay.
Right? But there's no connection. You hear women say that. I don't have any connection. And you're like, oh, my God, I'm connected with you all the time. I see you every single day. We go to bed together. We wake up together. What more connection do you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, but there's no connect.
Okay.
It's that disconnect during talking. And, again, part of it is because I haven't given you what role I want you to take. Right? Hey, I'm still having a problem with my boss. Here's what happened today. I need some help.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know your job.
Just
listen.
And it's not problem solver.
Right.
Okay.
Right? So
heaven
most
forbid.
Right. So and that's exactly what I was going to get at, because most men go, okay, they're thinking. They're not listening what you're saying. They're thinking about how they're going to solve the problem as you're talking. So they're not listening to what the... So then you finish talking about how, you know, your boss... My boss, you know, came home from work. My boss called me a bitch in the bathroom. Can you believe that? The audacity that she would do that? And you're like, here's what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go to HR. I didn't ask you for your help. I just am telling you that...
mm-hmm.
You're like, well, but... Right? So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So take those everyday dynamics, right? And then add it to the work that you guys do, right? You're talking about very real, very big issues, very real issues. It isn't that, you know, your boss called you an asshole, because your boss probably calls you an asshole half the time you're at work, because that's paramilitary and military.
That's a little term of affection.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, and part of clinicians working with paramilitary and military need to get over themselves when it comes to language and what they're going to hear. And if they can't tolerate it, it's the wrong population, right?
To be true.
To be work, yeah, because, you know, they come in and the first three sessions, it doesn't matter if they're officers, firefighters, military, the first three sessions are, you know, usually an F-bomb every other word. It's every horror story they think to tell me, and they want to see how I'm going to react. What's she going to do? Is she going to cringe? Is she going to, you know, or is she going to say, so, tell me how you feel about that, right? Because that's the last thing that you want to hear, right? So, in a sense, relationships are the same way, right? You know, what you do and what you have to say isn't, you know, your boss called you an asshole. It's, hey, I went on this call, you know, there's a family of five, we were able to save two of the kids. They're now, no, you know, we don't know who to even call. I mean, right, you're going in and you're talking about life and death kinds of things. and the other person on the other end doesn't know what they're supposed to do with that. Am I supposed to listen?
Interesting.
Am I supposed to problem solve with you? Do you want me to say, oh, honey, I'm sorry? No. You don't want to hear. That's not what you want to hear. It's like, I don't even know what to say to you. You know, you're telling me this, and am I supposed to say, wow, it sounds like you had a really hard day at work? Like, I don't, what language am I supposed to use? So working with couples, that's a lot of what we're working on, is trying to get that information sussed out. You know, okay, can, you know, tell me what, you know, you want. I'll just make up a fictitious person for you, Susie, right? You know, how do you want her to respond when you're coming home and you've had a day like that, that is extremely, you know, traumatic, and you're exhausted and you need to talk about it. You want to talk about it, but she doesn't know how to respond. So, what's helpful, right?
And what, and now here's the thing, and we hear this with couples therapy or therapy. Mm-hmm. How would you like me to respond? Most of the time that people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, that being said, you've been in couples therapies, mm-hmm. where, when have they said things that do make sense? How do they, what are good ways to respond to those situations?
Good question. And it's, I think it's the finesse of the therapist. I really do. You know, it, in some ways, like what you do, there is an art form to it. I mean, you have to know exactly what you're getting into and where you're going to go and figure certain things out, and if you go in one direction or another. And therapy is the same thing. I don't think right off the bat it's a question that you ask. Because you're right, they don't know. I think there needs to be some education and some skill development and some things to happen before you ask that question. You know, how do you want them to respond? Because then they do have some knowledge. Okay, I've been doing that, you know, going to therapy 2-3 times. Now I've got a little bit of an idea of what do I want? You know what? I think I just want you to listen and not say anything, which I hear a lot. Or I think I just want you to listen and say, you know, what can I do for you right now? You know, do you want to go out for dinner? You know, do you want to drink? You want to hang out? You need alone time, right? Like that kind of a question. And that's usually what paramilitary and military personnel, men or women, okay, so this is again gender neutral, 9 times out of 10 what they say is, I just want to be asked in that moment, what do you need? Because I don't know what I need, and it's going to change from day to day depending on what the situation is. You know, I can have 2 very similar calls that I've been called on, but my response is going to be different with each one because I'm dealing with different dynamics, right? So to make the assumption that every time you go out on a call and it's an injured child, you're going to have the same response is foolish, right? So a lot of it is, that's usually the response that somebody's looking for, and women too, for that matter.
Right.
When I'm, you know, it's like, hey, you know, what do you need from me right now? You know, and again, it sounds, in this setting, it sounds trite and it sounds very simple.
It
and
does.
It's so,
and you've heard it 1,000 so times hard. In shows and TV and self-help books, but when you bring it to an individual level, I think it means much more.
That, and I think, you know, you're right. You know, this is stuff that, this, none of this is new stuff, right? And there's really no new couples therapy techniques out there. I think it really is, for me, therapy is about establishing a relationship with your client or clients. It's sort of this middle ground, right, where you have this lovely mic set up between right. the three of us sitting in
no
here.
No man's land.
Right? That's where the therapy happens. It's, I'm asking you to come in and be real, right? And there's an expectation that you will, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's individual or it's couples therapy. But at the same time, I need to do that too, right? I need to be my real self. You know, if I sit there and, you know, and getting back to that, so how does that make you feel? And I always tell clients, if I ever say that to you, you can throw one of the coasters at me, right? So I have all sorts of creative ways.
I notice it's just
there's lots
bamboo
of coasters.
Weaved together.
Exactly.
It's not, yeah, there's no ceramic coasters.
No.
That's smart on your part.
Thank you. Because it happens. They will. I will make a mistake and they will throw But, you know, a lot of times for me, it's sarcasm and humor. So how'd that work for you? Not good, you think? Okay, so what do you want to do with that? So it's developing that rapport, that relationship where it's comfortable and that you can come in as an individual in here and say whatever you want and it doesn't go anywhere. I can't by law tell anybody unless there's something, child abuse, or, you know, you're threatening to kill your boss. Right. Yeah.
Or self-harm.
Yeah. I mean, there's very, and very strict confidentiality laws. So beyond that, I can't talk about it. I'm not going to call your wife.
Right. And they're not going to be able to call here and find out about
you. Got it. They can't call unless you've given me written consent. Mm-hmm. There's, yeah.
So, and this is good, because talking about what someone can expect coming to therapy the first couple times and going through the first session would be just sitting down with them. Describe how that would go.
Yeah, every therapist is different. You know, California has very strict legal mandates and ethical mandates. We are all supposed to follow them. I won't comment on that.
Good.
No comment maybe is better than a comment.
Okay,
but
sure.
I'll just talk about what I do.
Great.
So I always tell clients on the phone, right? You're interviewing me as much as I'm interviewing you, right? And so that's an important piece. And if they come in to see me, we go through what's confidentiality, what are the laws. It's my contract really with the client. It's not their contract with me. They don't like me, they can leave. They are not contracted to see me for X number of sessions, right? I legally can't do that. But I have a contract that I have to uphold, right, when it comes to law and ethics. So I go through all of that. Let me explain to you how this works. Do you have any questions about it? Because confidentiality is a big thing. And I hold that very seriously. And my MO really is, if I get a phone call, hey, do you know so-and-so? Oh, you have the wrong number. Click. And I've pissed off more psychiatrists. And I'm like, well, I didn't get anything faxed over to me with a release of confidentiality. Sorry, you should know better, right? So I hold that very strongly. And so I go through that with the clients, and I spend as much time during that first session as we need to talking about it so they feel comfortable. And then I always say, look, in my opinion, therapy really is a relationship, and it has to be a good fit. And it may not be. I may have the wrong personality type for you. So give it a go for, you know, 2, 3, 4 sessions. If I'm the wrong person, tell me. Come, don't just not show up. Come in and tell me, because I have amazing referrals. I want to send you to somebody good where you're going to get the best results. My goal is not to keep you in therapy once a week for the next 3 years. My goal is to find solutions that are going to work for you, right? That you can implement into your daily life and living. And if you can do that in 3 weeks, great. You know, and I do have clients that'll come in and they'll see me 4 or 5 times, and then I don't see them for a year, and then I'll see them 3 or 4 times, and then I see them in 6 months. And that's just the way that they do therapy. They get what they need. It works for them. They don't come in. They come in when it doesn't work anymore. So for me, I'm very much what we call client-centered. So it's that relationship-based, but then looking at solutions. And there are so many theories. And it's important to have a clinician that has a lot of tricks up their sleeve, has a lot of theories, that has done work with paramilitary and military, that is comfortable working with this population. They understand the language and the acronyms and the lingo. They're not afraid to hear those stories. And a lot of it is not asking how you feel. You don't want to tell me how you feel. You don't know me. You want to come in and feel out, is this even going to work for you? So those first couple of sessions, you know, sometimes people jump right into their feelings and what's bothering them, and sometimes it takes them a little bit. You know, so I go with the flow. I have a questionnaire that I assess from. I try to stay away from being pathological, you know, unless it's important for some reason. You know, if somebody comes in and says, hey, I think I have PTSD, do you want me to screen for that? And they say yes, then that's a different issue. But if somebody's coming in and I'm like, okay, wow, they've got very chronic PTSD, I'm going to hold that for a little bit because I want to make sure I'm right.
Right.
I want to do a lot of assessment. You know, I want them to be comfortable with me so that we can talk about it. Because for me, PTSD isn't a death sentence. People get over it.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And they get over a lot of things, and sometimes with medication and sometimes without medication. And that's not my opinion. It's not my decision to make, right? I can't have an opinion, oh, medication is good, oh, medication is bad, because it may work for you and it may not work for them. You know what I mean? Or mm-hmm. vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. So if you want to try it, we go that path. If you don't, we go a different path, right? If I think that it's medically necessary, I'll say, look, I want you to go to your MD. I want you to have a physical. Let's make sure there's nothing organic going on with you, right? Because if you've got diabetes, if you have a thyroid condition, if you're taking medication, you can have psychological side effects. Sure. So before I give you this very heavy-handed diagnosis, right, let's make sure everything is okay, mm-hmm. right? And this isn't coming from somewhere else, right? From there, then we make the decision. Do you want to talk to a psychiatrist about medication, or mm-hmm. now that I've got this information, right, we know that it's not organic, we can try working this way, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm big on workbooks and homework and
good, right.
and multimodality,
reading different books, extracurricular, just self-help things,
and it works for some and it doesn't work for others. People will come in and go, I'm not doing homework. Nope. It's like, okay, don't do homework,
right?
And
this is homework for me already.
Yeah. And they get just as much benefit as opposed to somebody who comes in and who loves to read. It's like, here, read, this is a great book.
Mm-hmm. And so go ahead.
No.
I mean, it seems like you're willing to try thing any spectrum of treatment, any mode of treatment, if it's going to help the patient out. Either drugs using, or some kind of pharmaceutical, weaning them off of different substances, mm-hmm. potentially, and right. speaking of drugs or alcohol, or
right.
both. Self-help books, articles, journals, whatever they're willing to do.
Want to do. And there really
willing
is
to
a
put
difference.
In.
There is a difference between mandated therapy or court-ordered therapy than people choosing to go. And so when we talk about couples therapy, mm-hmm. right, getting back to that, there's a huge difference between somebody going because their spouse wants them to go,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and somebody going because they want to save the relationship.
Absolutely.
And there is no middle ground. People come in for only two reasons. One person wants out and they can't get out. They don't know how. Right? But it's on their mind. Or they want to save the marriage. Or the relationship. There is no middle ground.
Yeah, it's the, yeah.
And so a lot of, and again, with my style, I don't sugarcoat things. I'm not the easiest therapist in the world. I call people out on stuff. But that's, again, working with this particular population, that's what works. It's like, I don't want to hear your garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Stop lying to yourself. Now tell me what you want, right? And I'm not that
well.
Harsh,
it's the point is, why are you here? You're here to either help yourself or someone else is doing it. But if you're really here to help yourself, let's talk about the things that matter to yourself. Don't lie about this stuff because you're only lying to yourself.
Right.
Answer things truthfully.
Right.
And it's really, you're going to get what you put into it.
Right. And a lot of it too, again, you're talking about having, these particular populations come to therapy. A lot of it is note-taking. They want to know what's in the notes, what's in the files. And again, there are laws on having legal access. There's some contingencies on that. But everything for me is authentic. I'm like, this is what goes in your file. A lot of times when I'm writing notes, I'm not, holding my notepad and writing subjective, okay, this person is looking like, my notes on the lap, or I'm drawing pictures and I'm going through things.
You're doodling?
I'm doodling. I'm drawing like, okay, this is what your brain
looks
like. Here's
Garfield with lasagna.
Yeah. This is what your brain looks like. This is what your brain looks like on drugs.
Uh-huh.
But, or I'll show them, okay, here's my note.
Yeah.
And if you ever want to see your file, it's yours.
It should.
You can see it.
Right.
But that's my style of therapy. That's mm-hmm. not every therapist. So those are questions to ask. Whatever you're concerned with, right, about coming in, how do you do therapy?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk about my mother. Okay. Some therapists are like, well, but that's very important information. Okay, true. For some styles of therapy, it is, right? That maybe that's the wrong therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is shopping around and feeling, getting that right vibe, and it's not going to be comfortable the first couple of times. Therapy is not fun. It's not fun.
No, but
right?
It's also potentially, it's not as traumatizing as people may think it is initially. You do have you do have hold of your own reins.
Absolutely.
Essentially. So you can choose what to talk about, what not to talk about, how to introduce things, how not to introduce
and
things.
And if it doesn't work and you don't like the person, you can choose to leave, right, and terminate therapy with them. So, you know, any therapist that says, no, you need to sign a 1-year contract, I would want, if it were me,
get out.
I'd be like, no, thank you.
Yeah. We got to wrap up pretty quick here. Okay. I had a question about
Absolutely.
This. You people would be so, they're hesitant to bring up things. And we talked about if they're a danger to other people or themselves. I'm sure a lot of people come in here and they have had thoughts of suicide.
Yeah.
They definitely sent to suicidal tendencies or maybe previous. So they may be hesitant to speak about it with someone who's a psychologist because they feel that it will be reported to you when they talk about those things. How do you look at it? Do you look at it as a threat?
Good question. So they... So suicide is tricky. There's no legal mandate for me to report. I am not legally obligated to. However, I am ethically obligated to. Okay, so there's a little wiggle room. Suicidal ideation, right, basically means that at some point in time you go, you know what, I'm seriously feeling that I would be better off if I weren't here. I just don't want to be here anymore. I really just don't. I can't do this anymore. It's those kinds of thoughts, right? My family would be better off if I just left, if I were gone, if I died. But it doesn't go beyond that, right? And I find it hard-pressed to think, especially in the States in this day and age, that there isn't one person out there that hasn't thought that at least once in their lifetime, right?
Sure.
You know, especially as a kid, right? Something happens at school, and it's like, I'm just going to die. My life is over. Mm. Okay, ideally, I mean, that's the definition of suicidal ideation. When we worry is when it comes with depression. And so what I do is I ask all the time, are you suicidal? What do you think about? Are you homicidal? And I ask that routinely. The biggest prevention of suicide is talking about suicide. Okay. It's not the myth that if I talk about it, that's going to implant this idea. It's the absolute opposite. The more you talk about it, the more you normalize it, the more success they have getting out of those thought processes. Mm-hmm. So when do you report? When there's a plan, right? This weekend, when my family's gone on Sunday, I'm going to hang myself. Okay, so now you've got a plan and you've got a motive. You've got a means, what they're going to do, right? Okay. What do we need to do to get you some help? Ideally, what I'm going to try and do clinically is help them get into a hospital where they can be safe and get the help that they need. If they are not willing to do that, I cannot force them to do that, okay? Unless they're telling me they're going to go in the parking lot and shoot themselves after our session, then I can call the police. I can call a welfare check and say, hey, I have a client, you know, they missed their appointment, they are suicidal, they're depressed, can you just swing by and make sure they're okay? I can do that. But I have to have an ethical reason why I would break confidentiality. So it comes with a time, you know, a timeline, a plan, a means, a mode, a place. There has to be enough detail for me to go, okay, you've been thinking about this long enough that it's premeditated now.
Right.
Right?
It's beyond the point
right.
of why would I do
right.
this. It's
and,
how.
And it's sketchy because that's, again, where the finesse of the therapist, because, you know, you have people come in and they're very, very depressed. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know what? I really would just take a bottle of sleeping pills. Mm-hmm. Do you have any at home? No. Where would you get them? I don't know. I mean, I know I can go to Safeway and buy Tylenol PM, Advil PM. I could take an entire bottle of those. But you know what? I'm just too tired to even get in the car and drive. I'm so depressed. I don't even want to go out. Okay. Do I really need to call on that one? I mean, they've given me how they're going to do it.
Right.
But there's no timeline. Right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to watch it. I may say, you know what, I want you to come in at the end of the week so we can talk about it. Or I may call you and check in. So I'm going to be more diligent about watching that. Right?
Right.
But I'm not necessarily going to pick up the phone and panic.
Right.
Right? It's the same thing with homicide. Okay? We come in and we go, oh my God, I just want to kill him. We say it all the time. I just want to kill him. Kill him. Kill her. Kill, right? Kill my boss. It's a figure of speech now. All right. That's really different than, hey, Joelle, I just bought a .22 and I've, you know, got my ammo stacked and, you know, I'm leaving your office and at 2 p.m. I'm taking that son of a bitch out. Okay, now I have to call the police because we have a problem. right? So it's really having a good therapist and asking them, have you worked with people that have suicidal ideation? Mm-hmm. Is this going to get back to my captain?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, what is your duty to report? Well, my duty to report is not calling your captain.
And that's a lot of the things that people in this field
are concerned
with.
It's not calling your wife.
Right.
It's not calling your...
Where's this going to get out to?
Right. It's, if I need to make a call, the reality is I'm going to call a psychiatric team that's attached to the sheriff or the police department to go on a welfare check to make sure that you're okay if you're not willing to go into the hospital. And it has to be pretty severe. But if you're having suicidal ideation... The reality is that's why, you know, I hope you come to therapy.
That's why you're here, right.
Right?
We're talking about this so we get it out. We get
exactly.
it diffused.
Exactly. And even if you do need to go to the hospital, there is no legal or ethical reason why I need to call your captain unless your captain is the target of a crime.
Right. Which is not, yeah. So,
and that is not suicide.
Right. So, and the issue, so, I mean, and as far as people talking about suicide and committing mm-hmm. it, I'm sure it far outweighs the people speaking about it, far outweigh the people that actually commit suicide.
Absolutely.
The point is, this should be a safe place to come in and talk about whatever. Your past and how you're feeling now about
it. Right. And I'll tell you a real quick anecdote before we go. If you look in the corner, I have Sid the bear. He's a little brown bear that's made out of wood. That when I opened my practice full-time a year and a half ago, one of my clients I had when he was 10, 11, almost 12, a lot of trauma, very, very serious case, sent me Sid. Sid showed up on my doorstep, and who's about 80 pounds, so that was fun, with a little note that said, hey, Doc, thought you needed a secret keeper for your new office. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm at the University of Nevada. And I thought it was great, because it's like you say, how do you know when you're doing a good job? You know, a lot of times we don't know. We know they live, but we don't know what happens. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They get help, but we don't. So in some ways, we're always unresolved with the people that we're working with, right? We don't know what happens to them, and we have to live with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may be suicidal. They may leave this office. I don't see them for 3 months, and then I find out that they followed through with it. We, you know, that's part of what we have to deal with. So Sid, the secret keeper, so I always tell even my grown-ups, but especially with children, you can come in here and say whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Good.
I really don't have any judgment. I have my own baggage and my own issues. And oh, by the way, when I need to go to therapy, I go to therapy. I go to my own therapy. Right?
So, believe in it.
You know, yeah. And it's important for me to do that with this job, right? For me to work out my own issues so I'm not judging whoever's sitting here. Right?
Absolutely.
But say whatever you want. Sid's going to keep the secret. Because when you leave here, leave it here. Don't mm-hmm. take it home. Mm-hmm. I'm not writing it down.
Right.
You know, it's okay that you called your wife whatever name in the book that you want, and then you leave it and you're like, gosh, I really love her. I think I'm going to take her out for dinner. Great. That's a great idea. And nobody knows. No,
right.
No one knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, whatever, my captain this, my captain that, and I really love my job. Okay. It's not like I'm calling the captain.
Mm-hmm.
You know what so-and-so said about you? Right? So
that's
I'll leave you.
Right.
Yeah. So I'll leave you with that antidote. You're right.
That's great. Yeah.
Sid the secret keeper, because you can say anything you want in here.
And it's important, I think, for caregivers to know if they can't go to somebody in their family or friends, or it's something that involves the firehouse or the military, you know, where they work, there's another option. And they can come here, they can work through things through. And as far as expense-wise goes, do you take insurance? Do most places take insurance? If not, what's the average amount of money for this?
Yeah, so the insurance I take is TRICARE TriWest, and that's mostly military. However, if there are police officers, CHP, firefighters, EMS, who were military, they probably may still have those benefits. But yeah, most of us don't take insurance. We give you what we call a super bill, and then if you want to submit it to insurance, you can. When you submit it to insurance, there's a diagnostic code, so there's pluses and minuses to submitting to insurance.
Right.
So
it's not going on your record. In other words, they don't see where it's going to, would be maybe an untraceable thing, which is a good thing.
Right. If you're not submitting to insurance, then nobody knows that you've even gone to therapy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. The minute, you know, you submit the claim, I have to give you a diagnostic code. And, you know, I try and work with codes that are true but don't have a big impact unless it's beneficial for the client.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the the, you know, there's pluses and minuses with insurance.
Mm-hmm.
The average range, you know, it depends on who you're seeing. If you're seeing a social worker, it's, and you know, social worker therapist, it's going to be less than seeing a psychologist. Psychiatrist deals with medicine,
mm-hmm.
right? So you're looking at, I would say, between, you know, 90 maybe at the very low end, to, you know, 250. However, people have sliding scales, and it never hurts to ask. And if they don't, they always have somebody that they can refer to. There's a lot of training centers. Stanford Pacific Graduate School has one called the Gronowski Clinic that will see clients for $15. John F. Kennedy University has one, and they have one in Berkeley, one in Santa Cruz, one in Cupertino, that they will see people for $10. So there's a lot.
$10,
yeah,
that's
there's a
great.
Lot. So there's stuff out there. There's tons of stuff on the web as far as looking at your union, you know, looking up California unions, and you can see psychotherapists and different kinds, and mm-hmm. there are people that are advertising on there or people that the union's endorsing. There's on the web called Give an Hour, which is a nonprofit organization, and people like me donate time to see people, and you can call Give an Hour. They'll give you or you can even log in and find a therapist and call up and say, hey, I saw you on Give an Hour, and they'll see you for free. Now, everybody has a certain limitation. Some people will see them for free, and that's their mm-hmm. their pro bono
work,
that they
right.
do. Or they'll say, you know, we'll do 3 sessions for free, and then what can you afford? So
mm-hmm.
there's stuff out there, but again, it's finding the right therapist. And when you find the right therapist, if you can't afford it, talk to them about it, because people are always willing, most people are always willing to work with you, you know?
Especially being in the kind of profession you are, where you're importance is
codependent, yes.
right. Yeah, you gain importance in your life from helping people,
right?
In communication, interpersonal communication.
Exactly.
We have to stop there. This
yes.
I have so many more things that I want to go over. We'll have to do it again, Julie.
I would love to.
I would love to have you back on.
Well, thanks
absolutely.
For having me.
Thanks for having us in here.
Absolutely.
And if any of you have any questions, can I put your name on the website?
Sure.
And just as or have a link to maybe your webpage, and we'll put some
yeah.
links up there.
Sure.
If not to you specifically, to other programs around here where they can call, get some access to maybe.
Absolutely. And I'm happy to take phone calls or emails with people that just have questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't see everybody, and I don't work with all of the issues that come up, but I always have a great referral base.
Great.
The other thing on my website is you'll see a links and resources page, and it's extremely extensive. So even just to go and check that out, you'll see links to all sorts of things, books,
great.
Websites, other therapists. So
yeah.
there's quite a bit of resource material on my website.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again so much.
If you've got it, then use it. Good night, everyone.
Adios, muchacho.
Are you okay?
I'm a little bit lonely these days.